This is White Sox Weekly. Your all-access pass to everything White Sox.
Swing and a drive! Deep to left! Gone!
That was as hard as a baseball can be hit by anybody.
White Sox Weekly on the home of the White Sox, ESPN Chicago.
Now, here's your host, Jeff Mellor.
Good Saturday morning to you. Hope you're having a fabulous one, even though the temps are a bit frigid. A little colder than it was last week. I know everybody in the city is getting set for a big Bears game tomorrow. We'll call it evening, which you can hear, of course, right here on your home of the Bears, in addition to your being of your home of the White Sox, ESPN 1000. But we're going to talk a little bit of White Sox here over the next hour, get you caught up on everything you need to know about your favorite baseball team. But in addition to this being a show about the White Sox, it is also a show about baseball. And I do want to briefly address the big news from Major League Baseball this past week. Thursday night, the news broke that Kyle Tucker had set a new record for the highest annual average value per year when he signed a four-year, $240 million deal with the Los Angeles Dodgers. And, of course, this is an interesting move because the defending back-to-back champs, get stronger with the addition of Kyle Tucker. But at what cost, right? I think a lot of people around baseball are looking at this and wondering, what does this mean for the sport as a whole? In 2026, it means the Dodgers are going to be that much more difficult to beat when they go and try and continue and go ahead and cap off a three-peat, which is what they're aiming to do. But Kyle Tucker, for what amounts to $60 million a year over four seasons, and there is an opt-out after years two and three, it's interesting because as good as Kyle Tucker is, you saw, if you are somebody who follows baseball very closely, or if you just even live in Chicago as a White Sox fan, it was maybe hard to ignore. Kyle Tucker really fell off in the second half. Now, he had an outstanding first half before injuries kind of sabotaged the rest of his season, but that's a significant number to give a player who I think most people who follow baseball closely would call a top, I'll call him a top 25 player, a position player, no doubt. But, you know, we can argue and say he's probably a top 20 player in baseball. But I don't think too many people are going to call Kyle Tucker a top 10 or a top 5 player in baseball. And so for a 29-year-old to land the deal that he did, oftentimes we're talking about, hey, are you going to take the long-term deal, the 10-year, $300 or $400 million deal, or are you going to take the short-term deal for big AAV? And this deal that Kyle Tucker lands with the Dodgers, it makes all the sense in the world. 4 years, $60 million per year, when the next closest long-term deal was reportedly being offered by the Blue Jays, who lost to the Dodgers in the World Series, by the way. Their 8 or 10 year deal was in the ballpark of the low 300 figure. Well, of course, Kyle Tucker is going to take the short-term deal with the Dodgers and then have an opportunity to try and cash in. So it's an interesting deal, and it just really does call into question, what does the future of baseball hold, especially after the 2026 season when the current CBA expires? Interesting days ahead. So wanted to touch on that as the big news in baseball that came across Thursday night before we get you into all the White Sox conversation that we're going to have. You're going to hear from the White Sox International Director of Scouting, David Keller, here coming up next. Also, Jared Kelnick as well on White Sox Weekly. Sox Fest Live returns to the Remova Theater, presented by Rates, Blue Moon, and Wintrust. Celebrate the start of the season with music, entertainment, and insider conversations with members of the 2026 Clubhouse on Saturday, January 31st. For more information and to secure your tickets, visit whitesox.com/SoxFestLive. Big stuff going on this week. It was International Signing Day on Thursday. The White Sox announced 18 signings, and a man who knows more about that than anyone else inside the organization, the Director of International Scouting, David Keller, talked about it. We'll let you hear what he had to say coming up next, right here on your home of the White Sox, ESPN 1000. Mm-hmm.
This is Chicago's home for sports.
On app.
The ESPN Chicago app.
In HD.
FM 100.3 HD2.
And of course on AM.
ESPN 1000.
This is White Sox Weekly.
Hey, White Sox fans, get access to the best seats at the best value and lock in a 2026 ticket plan today. Be here for the biggest matchups, exciting new promotions, and opening day on Thursday, April 2nd. Plus, enjoy flexible payment plan savings on single games and more. To secure your ticket plan, visit whitesox.com/2026. Jeff Meller back here on White Sox Weekly, hanging out with you each and every Saturday as we catch you up on your favorite baseball team, the Chicago White Sox. And it was a big day on Thursday. It was International Signing Day, and the White Sox announced agreements with 18 international players, including 9 right-handed pitchers, 3 catchers, 3 shortstops, and 3 outfielders. They also had a couple of headliners in this class, including Venezuelan catcher Fernando Gratterol, who was the 27th ranked international prospect, according to MLB Pipeline, and outfielder Sebastian Romero, who was the 31st ranked amongst Baseball America's top prospects in the 2026 international class. MLB Pipeline ranked Gratterol as the best catching prospect in the 2026 class. He received the highest signing bonus by the White Sox at $1.6 million, and the aforementioned Romero signed for a $1.5 million figure. So a lot of new young players from the international market, primarily a lot from Venezuela, a lot from the Dominican Republic, and even a signing from Mexico. And the man who is most informed about the White Sox signings in this area is their international director of scouting, and that would be David Keller. And he met with the White Sox assembled media on Thursday to discuss the 2026 international class.
Signing day 2026. This is an exciting day for the White Sox. It's a celebration of the young men that we're introducing to our organization. It marks the beginning of their official start to their professional journey. And I'm just really proud of the efforts that our team has put forth. I can't overstate how humble I am to be a small part of the process, and excited to hand them off to Paul Janisch and our talented player development staff. I just want to note today, a day like today doesn't just happen. It requires a great deal of work and sacrifice from a lot of people over a number of years. First and foremost, the support that we continue to receive from Chris and from ownership has been second to none. We've been able to communicate and collaborate effectively with departmental leaders in R&D, player development, sports performance. This operation and this day is truly a team effort. And our international leadership group, Luis Silverio, Adrian Puig, Rudy Moretta, Mac Grabowski, Max Hanley, Devin Wright, they do a tremendous job day in and day out to make all of this possible. And just want to say thank you to everybody on our staff who they relentlessly pursue talent each and every day. And they're the reason we're here.
I guess to start off, last year was obviously unique in coming in at the end of the season a little bit. And we know that these agreements are kind of years long process. Just how different was this year in terms of how much you were able to kind of get your fingerprints on things, or it felt like a new operation putting this class together than maybe last year?
Yeah, I think, James, that's a good question. We spent a lot of time assembling this new staff, and that poured over into this year. But we really tried to identify talented individuals and then educate them on the organization's values and systems and put them in the best possible position to be successful at what they're good at, which is identifying talented players, assigning value to those players, and making sure that we have the opportunity to see them and make good decisions on them.
Obviously, it's not up and running yet, but was the new academy is going to be a place where a lot of these guys play at least at some point. Is that more of a factor or something that weaves into the pitch more this year?
Yes, it does. Obviously, we have what we feel like will be a state-of-the-art facility coming in 2027. And certainly when we talk to players, their families, their representatives, we are talking about the new facility and the training advantages that we hope that it provides.
Hey, David, just overall, can you just give a little bit of an overview of this year's first wave of this year's class?
Yeah, no, appreciate the question, Lamon. I think we're excited about all of these guys. We have the opportunity to introduce 18 young men today, 9 pitchers, 9 position players, spanning 4 different countries. The headlines are going to go to the higher bonus dollar players, but we're equally as excited about guys who maybe didn't receive quite as much money. And, you know, we think that they have a chance with our player development group to blossom and grow and provide value to the White Sox.
Yeah, a couple of those guys that you mentioned there. Yeah. What can you tell us a little bit more about Fernando and Sebastian as well?
Yeah, so Fernando Graterol is interesting. He's 17-year-old. He's got a good body. He's a catcher by trade, but he's more athletic than most catchers. You know, we're talking about a guy who runs a 6'8", 60. He's got plus bat speed. Raw power is, you know, I would say, especially for the position, is at the top of the class. And we feel like he's one of the best catchers in the 2026 international crop. As for Romero, you know, we're excited about him as well. He's a very fluid athlete, another guy who has a good body, has a chance to defend the position, a premium position in center field, and consistently puts together good at-bats, makes contact, and we're very excited to have him.
What stuck out to me is, like, when you see teenagers who are kind of filled out to over 200 pounds, especially someone on the mound like Roderick Ramirez, just reading reports about how there's still, like, physical projection left, or you're kind of anticipating the velocity grow, just how far along or how much more, you know, kind of development and projection is left for him?
I think there's a significant amount of development remaining for all of our pitchers. As it pertains to Roderick, Roderick's got a 6'3 frame. He might still grow a little bit. The 200 pounds is carried very well on his frame. It's lean muscle mass. He's an athlete. He moves really well on the mound. Our group has seen him up to 94 already. He's got a solid slider. He's developing the changeup. He's got all of the starter attributes and characteristics that we look for. And so it's a nice blend of someone who is ready to go in and be competitive now in the Dominican Summer League, but also has the ability to continue to grow in his body, develop experience on the mound. That's something that pitching in competitive situations is something that a lot of these young men are going to experience for the first time, where they have to navigate a lineup a couple of different times. And really looking forward to watching him embrace that challenge. And I think the sky's the limit for Roderick. Very excited that he's a part of our class and to watch him play this year.
With obviously what's going on in Venezuela, was that a wrench in this final week of putting this class together at all, or did that not become as big of an issue as maybe anticipated? How did it kind of play out from your perspective?
Yeah, I think that's a fair question. You know, obviously there are major hotbeds in the international market, and Venezuela happens to be one of them. There are a lot of good players come from everywhere, but there are a lot of good players that come from Venezuela. And so long before this day, we put wheels in motion or plan in motion to have the Venezuelan players and their families join us in the Dominican Republic. I mentioned earlier, we're a team-focused group, and there's no better way to demonstrate that than bringing everybody together. And what I can tell you is that everything went according to plan, and we feel fortunate that that happened.
You talked a little bit about Ramirez there, but just over in general, the 9 pitchers that you were able to sign, just what sort of stands out about that group, and what are some of those things that excite you about those pitchers?
Yeah, so I mentioned the physicality of Roderick. I think we have a group, generally speaking, that they're tall, they're long, they have the physical attributes that we look for. The majority of them are athletic and move well with their deliveries. And then they have stuff. You know, I think for the for the first time that I can remember, we're signing a group where the majority of them have already touched 90 miles an hour, and there's still room to grow with each and every one of them. And so I think the pitching group, I said it last year, I think it's true this year. The pitching group has a chance to be a real strength of this class for us. We put together a very thorough process that incorporated a lot of things, and I think allowed us to make really good decisions. And I'm excited to see the group as a whole move forward. And it's not just Roderick Ramirez or Franchel Cristostomo or Yordani Marte. They all bring something unique to the table, and they have traits that we think can be developed into valuable members of our organization.
Yeah, David, I'm just curious to see, you know, since you've joined the organization, you know, end of last season, just coming through this first, you know, full year in a way, just kind of how have you seen the staff kind of continue to grow and develop over that stretch?
Yeah, so that was a big part of what we wanted to institute when I came on board. You know, I talk a lot about, with our leadership group, I talk a lot about my role in all of this. And, you know, for me, it's about being the culture builder and being a guardian of the process so that we're making good decisions. You know, we spend a lot of time with our group talking about the organizational values and really putting systems in place so that guys understand what it is we're looking for, what we're trying to identify, and ultimately what we're trying to develop and grow. And I couldn't be happier with the progress that our group has made in that time.
I think in the past you brought up, you know, having scouts with a portable TrackMan and, you know, more kind of avenues to bringing in data. You know, as you went through this process with this year, are there guys who, you know, maybe popped to you a little bit, or maybe more than you were thinking initially from what you were able to bring in as far as data to the process?
Yeah. So obviously we're trying to use all the information at our disposal. There's this interesting cross-section of people and technology that comes together when it's time to make decisions. And so we can use it as a crutch and use it as a confirmation bias, or we can use it to help identify players, or we can use it as both, as a way to support certain decisions. And I think over time, at least over this last year, we've been able to really utilize the data and the information, not only to identify certain traits specifically with pitchers, but also use it to confirm what our eyes are telling us, whether it's blast motion or exit velocity on TrackMan. It really enables us to support, okay, Stewart's Valdez, who signed with us today, man, he really has power. Well, that's backed up with exit velocities that are topping 109 miles an hour for a 16-year-old. Those sorts of things help us make decisions and also feel comfortable with those decisions.
Yeah, I was tempted to just ask you about every big dude who's listed on here, but what's the kind of story with Valdez? Has he been 6'4" for a while now, or is someone kind of popped up like later in the process for you?
He's someone who popped up later in the process, and I'm very excited about Stewart's Valdez. He's somebody who every time that I have had the opportunity to watch him play in games or face live at bats, he's hit a home run. So I think that means that I need to attend close to 20 DSL games this year and make sure that he's in the lineup. But he's really athletic. To watch him run, he's running a 6'5" in the 60. He's throwing plus from the outfield. He can do a lot of different things. And then you ask him to go over to first base because he's such a large target and he's doing splits and scooping balls. And so, you know, I don't want to oversell Stewart's here. I don't want to place undue expectations on him, but I'm very excited about Stewart's.
So sometimes you're going by the data. Sometimes you're just signing the guy who hit the home run every time you see him.
I mentioned the 109 exit velos, James.
I know he's like the last guy listed on this, but I don't recall a ton of previous signings from Mexico. And so I was interested in like the story behind Guzman, and or is that an area that your guys are hoping to get into more? Is there maybe kind of a unique story for how you got on your radar?
Yeah, so Ander Guzman, I'm glad you brought that up. Obviously, you've heard me say this previously, good players come from everywhere. It's our job to identify them. Our scout who lives in Panama was able to see him play in a showcase. He brought him to our attention. We made a concerted effort to get data on him. And ultimately, when we saw him, we liked what we saw. He's a little bit older, but talented nonetheless. And, you know, I think 2017 was the last time that we signed a Mexican-born player. This allows us to raise our profile in places where talented players are coming from, and Mexico is one of those places.
I guess still, is there a sleeper that you want to highlight? I know you probably already picked they're all your favorites, but is there someone maybe under the radar that you feel particular optimism about?
Yeah, so you're asking me to differentiate between my children here, James.
Right, exactly.
I love them all. I'm excited for them all. I'm excited about the opportunity they have in front of them. I talked about Stewart's. I was effusive in my praise of Stewart's. I'll tell you I'll pick a position player and a pitcher if you'll allow me. So
I was going for a rank 1 to 18 if you could, but you're talking about it.
The position player that I think is a sleeper in this class is Felix LeBron. Felix is a very, very, very good athlete. He's a plus athlete. He's running a 6.66. He's, he's got exit velos over 100 miles an hour. He's got bat speed that's 78 miles an hour right now, topping out 78 miles an hour. And this is a guy that, when we talk about the principles of scouting, body, I mentioned athlete, check, tools, and then last but certainly not least, maybe most importantly, is the makeup. This guy loves to play. He's a competitor, and I'm really excited to watch him take on this new challenge. On the pitching side, man, I like a lot of these guys. I think Yordani Marte is a 16-year-old. He's got an unbelievable personality. He's grown since I last saw him. He probably checked in today around 6'1". He's very athletic and not dissimilar from some other guys. He can really spin a breaking ball. So his velocity is up to 92, but his ability to spin a breaking ball, repeat his mechanics, and throw strikes with them, they have me excited. And I'm going to pick one more. Jefferson Tumari, a Venezuelan arm, who facially looks a little bit like Carlos Carrasco, has a very similar attack. It's an east-west profile where he can really sink it and slide it. Still maturing, still growing into his body, and has some good weight to add, which could only improve his velocity and overall ability. I'll leave you guys with one last story, and this is only because James is pushing the envelope with how many players I can talk about. One of the perks of the job is every once in a while I get to bring my family to the Dominican Republic or on trips. I brought my oldest son back in July, and we had a great time, first of all. Secondly, I took him to several workouts and tryouts. He's a 15-year-old who's a freshman in high school, and I wanted him to see what these kids do to prepare. And what they go through every day as they attempt to chase the dream of becoming a professional baseball player. And he wasn't paying attention at the workout, but he came up to me and asked me if there was a player in particular at that workout that I liked. And I told him, I think, it might take a while for it to realize or for it to develop, but I think Sam Luis can hit. And so now my son is going to be paying attention to Sam Luis' track, and I hope I'm right.
Love that from the White Sox Director of International Scouting, David Keller, sharing the family story where he brought his son to one of the workouts. And as a father of a 15-year-old, I can certainly understand trying to find different ways to show your son or even daughter how to train, and if you're chasing a dream, what you need to do and be willing to sacrifice to get there. So pretty cool for all of these 18 players who the White Sox announced on Thursday. I'm Jeff Meller. This is White Sox Weekly. When we come back, we had an opportunity to meet with Jared Kelnick, one of the White Sox signings in free agency recently, and it was a very revealing conversation about why he chose the White Sox and some of what he's working on to tap into that potential that once had him rated as a top 10 prospect in all of baseball. So we'll share the conversation with Jared Kelnick and the assembled media coming up next right here on White Sox Weekly.
Follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Twitter at ESPN 1000.
Welcome to White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000.
Sox fans, sign up to become a White Sox insider and get special offers, single game ticket presales, and other exciting content delivered right into your inbox free. Visit whitesox.com/insider today. I'm Jeff Meller back here on White Sox Weekly hanging out with you. We just heard from International Director of Scouting David Keller on the 18 signings that the White Sox announced this past Thursday. Well, earlier in the week, Jared Kelnick, who signed with the White Sox and who was once a highly thought of prospect in the New York Mets organization and then in the Seattle Mariners organization before his odyssey through baseball also took him to the Atlanta Braves and now finds him with the Chicago White Sox after signing this year. Very thoughtful and interesting conversation Jared Kelnick had with White Sox media earlier this week when he talked about why he chose the Chicago White Sox.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to the opportunity. I think that, you know, I had a few ties to like guys that were in the organization, and I kind of, what I guess drew my attention to it was kind of where they're heading. And, you know, with it being pretty close to where I grew up, and like you had mentioned, like having ties there when I was in high school and playing in that stadium before, you know, Chicago's my favorite, city that I've ever played in. So to be able to potentially, you know, call that home, I'm looking forward to that.
You said about the direction they're going. What have you, I know you've been busy with your own stuff, obviously your own game with the teams you've been with, but what have you kind of noticed that Chris and the front office have kind of put together, and are they, you know, are the young core they're building getting a little bit of notice around baseball at this point?
Yeah. I mean, I think that definitely like they got a lot of young guys and they got a lot, they have so much talent. And I think that, you know, where just the, I played against a few of them, like some that are in the big leagues now, played against a few of them in the minor leagues, and like there's some ball players, like they want to win and they know what it takes to win. And you know, at the end of the day, like you want to have a good culture in the clubhouse, because like the culture will outwin the talent any day of the week. And so it's like it's combining the culture with experience, and you know, with the organization being younger, you know, there's a, I think the exciting part is that we're going to be able to hopefully experience like some ups and downs together, you know, this year, and to continue to grow.
Just what about this opportunity is exciting for you in terms of like your own individual fit with what they're doing here?
Yeah, I think the big thing is, you know, being, you know, close to where I grew up. I said, you know, I was talking to my parents about it. Like, I'm looking forward to that opportunity. You know, I'm looking forward to going out there and proving like the player that I can be. I'm looking forward to, you know, playing with another group of guys. You know, I've been traded a couple times, and, you know, one of the cool things is you get to meet a whole different group of players and guys and build so many more like friendships. And that's definitely an exciting thing for me. So I'm looking forward to just getting to know the guys, getting to know the organization, and you know, doing everything I can to help the team win.
What have you kind of focused on working on for you this offseason, and how do you feel that lined up with, you know, what kind of player the White Sox to you is capable of being?
Yeah. I had a few meetings with them over the offseason, and I actually, like, what was great to hear is, you know, I had already, before I was even like, before my offseason really started to take, like, happen, where I was talking to teams, like, I already had a few things that I wanted to work on. And I was working on those. And then when I started to meet with teams and I had the conversation with the White Sox, everything that I was already, like, planning on working on was what they were striving for. They wanted to help work on with me. So that was definitely reassuring, just because, like, I felt that in our conversations, we were on the same page, and they had a clear plan of how they were going to, you know, help, you know, make me the player that I can be. And so it's definitely reassuring to hear that.
What were kind of broadly, you know, some of those things that you were really focused on this winter?
Yeah. The main thing was, like, when it comes to the swing is I have a tendency to get stuck back, and, like, my posture or whatever, I can be a little bit more lean back. And anyone that knows the swing, like, when your posture is back, it takes a while for it to get into the zone, and then it actually goes in and out of the zone pretty fast. So it doesn't work. And it can be tough dealing with, you know, change of speed when they're adding and subtracting on you. And so, you know, one of the things that I wanted to work on was making sure that, you know, my spine angle was more, you know, linear and wasn't stuck, lean back. And my weight distribution was more centered, just being an athlete in the box. That was the biggest thing. And so hearing them talk about that, hearing them acknowledge that, you know, the type of player that I am was reassuring to hear. Just a clear crystal plan that they had of, like, what they wanted to do to, you know, attack it was really motivating for me.
Hey, Jared, you mentioned Chicago being one of your favorite places to play. Just what was it like, whether you're facing the Sox or the Cubs or the Brewers, what was it like returning to the area and playing those games?
Yeah, I think, you know, I grew up in that area until I was 18, and I was in Chicago quite a bit, whether it was playing or whether it was visiting, just with my family. And so, like, the cool part about just being in that city is just, like, thinking of those memories and just it being, like, a place that, you know, I've had so much history with, like, not only just baseball, but off the field stuff too. And, like, there's so many things to do in Chicago. And that's, like, you know, that was definitely one thing that was intriguing to me, was the, like, where it is. And, you know, I've always felt that I play well in Chicago. So, hopefully I can keep doing that.
And just how's your game kind of continue? How would you kind of describe your 2025, and how's your game just continue to evolve over these last couple of years as well?
Yeah, I think that, you know, I'm still working to, you know, be as consistent as I possibly can. I think consistency is the name of the game. And, you know, I've been through a lot of ups and downs, and I'm trying to just learn from those and attack them and grow as a baseball player and as a teammate. And that's what I felt, like when I was having my conversations with the White Sox, that they were going to not only, you know, help attack things like offensively, like I talked about, but my vision for, like, the type of teammate that I want to be and the type of, like, leader I want to be, you know, I felt that just having the conversations with the people in that front office and on the coaching staff, I felt like they were going to, you know, bring the most out of me and help get me to that teammate that I want to be and that person that I want to be.
Hey, Jared, just wanted to ask you, you've been a part of, you know, the Braves and their winning organization. Just what were some things you learned that you can take from there as you, you know, join the White Sox?
Yeah, I think expectations can be a double-edged sword. And it's really however you decide to look at them. They can be a distraction. They can be a motivation. They can be a lot of different things. But I would say, like, understanding expectations and making sure that they are used in a proactive way and in a way that is, like, beneficial for the team and beneficial for the player itself. And, you know, the other thing that I would say that, like, I've learned is that regardless of how good you are or how good the team is, or, you know, every team goes through hot streaks, every team goes through cold ones. And at the end of the day, like, if you can separate those days and you can separate those at bats, you can separate those pitches, like, it makes you, you know, stay focused into, like, your internal work and, like, the things that you're doing. And because sometimes I think when those cold streaks happen, we tend to, like anybody, whether it's baseball or just life in general, when stuff happens, you can start to overthink and you could start try to find, you know, a reasoning for why it's going south. But I think if you come back to, like, the foundation of, like, that's just the way that baseball works, is that there's ups and there's downs. And the only thing that you can do is be in control of, like, the now, and be focused and internalize, like, what makes you do really well.
Just following up on what you said about, you know, the angle you're trying to get in the box, like, I was noticing you're in a different setup by the end of last year than you were kind of at the start. It seemed like you were more, you know, in a crouch with your hands a bit lower. Was that kind of geared towards what you were aiming for, or does it look different now? Or
no, yeah, it definitely looks different now. You know, I definitely have made, like, some changes, like, into the off season for the better. You know, last year was I would call it a down year for me. But, like, there's a lot of things that there were things that came out that were good. And, you know, I'm looking forward to, I can't wait for spring training to start, because I feel like a lot of the work that I put in this off season has like propelled me into, like, a lot more consistent position to hit. And I think that, you know, I'm excited to test that, because at the end of the day, like, it's tough, man. Like, you know, you're in the cage, you're grinding, like, on flips, on machine, on BP and all that. But at the end of the day, like, the real test is in the box against a real life pitcher with a real life defense out there. And so you really don't get to see the real, you know, rewards until you're out there grinding with the boys. So I'm looking forward to that. And yeah.
I guess, like, baseball's constant adjustments, and especially coming off, you know, in an off season, you know, with a new opportunity, you want to make adjustments to improve, but how do you try to walk the balance between, you know, making adjustments you need to and not maybe over tinkering or making changes? Cause, you know, we all want to do things, you know, right, best thing possible, and the kind of natural impulse.
Yeah. And the answer to that question, I would say, is, like, the importance of being focused on, like, the way that your body is moving, the way that your body is, I would say that you don't make emotional decisions because maybe you tried something and you hit a home run and then you're, like, you're attached to it now, or it's like, oh, you know, that works, right? I think that when, especially now, like, this is why, like, I'm really excited for spring training, is that I've spent so much time, like, I focus on, like, the way that I notice the way that I feel, and I'm aware of, like, where my body needs to be in order to, like, give myself the best chance to succeed. I don't necessarily try to get wrapped up into, I'm just using the cage as an example, that, like, if I hit, like, three rockets in a row and then roll a couple over or whatever, it may be like the ball out of the machine, it cut a little bit or it sank. And then that was the difference of hitting a ground ball versus, like, a line drive in the gap. But that's not necessarily something you could control. You can't control whether the ball is going to cut or sink or all that. All you have control over is, like, being in the right position and noticing where you are. And so, to go back to your question, like, how do you not let it spiral out of control, is that you don't view the results as, like, a good versus a bad thing. You kind of just let the bad results be a learning opportunity. And I think that when you have, like, an instant where, like, you just had rolled something over or whatever, that whole time, like you're noticing that you're in the same spot, all that, everything's good. Well, then a rollover doesn't bother you as much because you already feel good. You felt like you're in the right spot. You notice where your hands are, all that stuff. And you're able to be in a clear head and be ready for the next pitch. Instead of when you look at it, good versus bad, it's, you know, why does this or like, what did I do differently? Like, why did that happen? And then you start searching and then the next pitch is already on you.
Was there kind of, you know, in talks with like Showman or Fuller, what kind of alignment did you kind of find and what you guys are trying to achieve in that?
Like in terms of my spine or in terms of what?
Yeah, like it, just in terms of like what you guys are trying to accomplish with your swing and where you think kind of the strengths are to build off of.
Yeah. So, like, you know, one thing that I felt that has been like a struggle of mine is like, I've always felt that I've had a leg kick my entire life. I've always hit like that. And I felt like I could get away with it when guys were throwing like, you know, 70% fastballs. And then now, like, you see the numbers and guys aren't throwing 70% fastballs. Like, now more guys are throwing more off speed than fastballs. And so, like, I recognize that, you know, the leg kick was, I was having a hard time like timing that up. And so I was like experimenting with like a toe tap thing where I'm able to control my backside a little bit better. And, you know, I had talked to Fuller about that. You know, I am down and I live outside of Nashville, and I've had the luxury of being able to hit with Fuller a few times. And, you know, it's somebody that just knows how the swing works and it's just an incredible teacher with like how he, you know, can communicate with players. You know, we felt that like a toe tap was going to be able to help me control my backside and be able to load as early as I wanted to, so that I don't have to fight the battle of trying to get on time.
I was going to ask, since I heard you live in Nashville, if you would run into like other White Sox people, but you know, Fuller's probably a good place.
I mean, yeah, I've run into a couple players. I hit with Corey Lee a few times. But yeah, there's a bunch of guys down here.
So there you go. Jared Kelnick already having an opportunity to work with some of his White Sox teammates, mentioning Corey Lee by name there, but also Ryan Fuller, who it's going to be interesting because has a lot of talent to work with in Kelnick. And as you've already heard in some of his answers, he's done what seems like a lot of work already in the offseason to try and make some changes and hopefully finally tap into that potential that did make him a first round pick and a top prospect in all of baseball, a man who was once part of the headliners in the deal that sent Edwin Diaz to the New York Mets. So interesting stuff there from one of the White Sox newest signings this offseason, Jared Kelnick, right here on your home of the White Sox, ESPN 1000.
We are talking White Sox.
This is White Sox Weekly.
If you missed the show, we put the podcast up on the ESPN Chicago app. So listen on your time.
White Sox Weekly. ESPN Chicago. Chicago's home for sports.
Celebrate your special occasion in 2026 with a White Sox party area. Reserve your group outing today to get access to the best spaces and top matchups like opening day on April 2nd, plus big matchups against the Cubs, the Dodgers, who we covered earlier, and Yankees. For more information, visit whitesox.com/groups or call 312-674-1000. I'm Jeff Meller. As we wrap up this edition of White Sox Weekly, I do want to say thank you very much, as always, to our executive producer of White Sox Baseball here on your home of the Sox, ESPN 1000. That is Brendan Riley. Outstanding work, as always, Brendan. And if you missed it, we did let you hear from the director of, or the White Sox international director, that is David Keller. And you also heard from Jared Kelnick as well. If you missed it, you can always check it out on the podcast on the ESPN Chicago app. That's going to do it for us this week, but we'll do it again next week. Again, each and every Saturday, even during the offseason, we get you caught up on your favorite baseball team, the Chicago White Sox, right here on your home of the White Sox, ESPN 1000.